Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Decentraland Podcast. So since this is Monday, we're going to name our winners and losers of the Serie A weekend. We have two interviews for you today. We have our dear friend John Solano to talk about all the recent topics on Roma. We're going to focus more off the pitch with him. We have, as usual, Twitter questions from our listeners. And we're going to close with a deep dive on Milan with our dear friend Matt Santangelo. On that one, we're going to focus a little bit more on the pitch compared to the one with John. Of course, we have some enhanced contents for our patrons, so thanks for your support. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our dear friend, the producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I'm going to ask you a question that I posted on my Twitter account. Usually I use the Calcioland one during the Milan-Juve match. And I simply asked, who would you rather have on your squad between Piontek, who at the time that I posted the poll had scored, and Moise Kean, who had yet to even come on the pitch? Not surprisingly, I got a lot of blowback, even from some Juve fans telling me, well, how could you even make this a poll? It's clearly Piontek. But I'm just going to ask you, because they are pretty different players, if you could have just one next season between these two, who would it be and why?
You know, listen, I totally get why some people might be like, well, I'll take Piontek, duh, especially since you asked the question after Piontek had scored, but before Moise Kean was even in the game. Piontek has obviously had a really good season in Serie A, has proven himself now for two different teams this season. He's 23 years old. He's probably only going to get better. I get why some people might just be like, Piontek, easy. Now, even those people, I would assume, still know Moise Kean has a lot of talent, and maybe if the question was different, who would you take over the next 5 to 7 years? Maybe a lot more people would say Moise Kean. I know I would. But even for next season, I think it's closer than maybe some people give it credit for. Not to take anything away from Piontek. I think he's going to be really good next year. But just to go over to Moise Kean for a second, is he just has this really, really infectious momentum. It's almost like his momentum right now is reminding me of Milan's momentum throughout the middle of the season. There's just some vibe I'm getting from Moise Kean. And I'm not saying I'm just getting it. I know many people are getting it. Now, if you follow me on Twitter, you're courageous if you do. But you know I do buy the hype in youth players. I absolutely do. I'm a little bit different from you there, David. Now, I've been wrong many times with youth players, but I've also been right. And I just feel like besides the talent that Moise Kean clearly possesses, he's got it. He's got something of that it factor. I love the saying, it's the talent that gets you here, but it's what's between the ears that keeps you here. And I really have been impressed with Moise Kean and his mentality recently in watching him. So anytime you're combining talent like Moise Kean's, and I think his talent plays in many different systems, of course Juve's, but I really think he has the ability to create for himself and be the beneficiary of people producing for him. So when you take his talent and you also combine it with a really impressive mentality and already this experience at a top club at such a young age, you never know how damn good he could be next year. I am going to go with Piontek for next season. However, I don't think it's so far apart where I might be sitting here in this seat this time next year thinking, damn, I should have went with that feeling I was getting with Moise Kean. But really, Piontek is just too good to pass up for this specific question. So it's closer, in my opinion, than maybe some people think, but I am going to go with Piontek. How about you, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easy answer is Piontek. He looks like someone who's already done it this season and get to 20 goals in a Serie A without having particular great service. But to me, the difference between him and Kean is I think Piontek does need some service to get his goals. And I feel like Kean is someone who can create his own shot. So I'm with you for more long term. And I think, too, it speaks so highly of Kean, how he's handled this week. I mean, how poetic it was that he would score the game winner. It was a very controversial match, and we'll get to that in the winners and losers. But I think him responding to everything that happened this week, and it felt completely inevitable when he came on the pitch that he was going to score. And as you mentioned, it's not just the goals, the creation. It's just what he does on the pitch. He really is an electric player, and I am someone who tends to really find reasons not to get excited for a young player because they've seen so many, not living up to the hype. But keep in mind that Kane's been a huge big name prospect for quite some time. He's lived up to his reputation. Piontek came out of nowhere, breakout season at Genoa and Milan. But Kane is from the Raiola school, and you just look at Mino, you can criticize his methods, and people certainly do, but you can't deny his eye for talent. He has Donnarumma, he has Kane, he has De Ligt, he had Paul Pogba, he still has Pogba now. So I think the fact that Kane is in the Raiola scuderia, as you would say, in Formula One, I think really says a lot. So I think Piontek's the easy answer, deserved, because he's totally proven himself. But I think Kane definitely has the potential to be more of a world beater and someone who can create his own shot. But let me ask you, Alex, let's look a little bit to the future. So this is our Monday episode. We're going to have some very important Champions and Europa League games for Juve and Napoli. And you've been our scout because obviously you know the Premier League really well with Arsenal, but you're also a fan of the Dutch League and Ajax is one of your teams. So you've been keeping us updated on both. Tell us a little bit on the latest. How do you think both these teams go into the matchups against Juve and Napoli now?
Yeah, David. So it really is polar opposites right now. Ajax are doing really well. So let's start with them. When we last talked about Ajax, Ajax were 5 points down on the Eredivisie table behind PSV. Now, after this weekend, they are in first because they're tied on points with PSV and they're way up in the goal differential. They're doing really damn well. And this is just such a dangerous team because they have so many very impressive attacking players that will not be at Ajax for very long. I mean, they just won't be. Now, Hakim Ziyech is really maybe their overall attacking star. He's 26, which is kind of weird because all of the other young attacking stars are very young. He's just kind of way out of his league and in the Eredivisie, and that's no insult. He's got 15 goals and 10 assists in that league, but you saw against Real Madrid. This guy's not fazed by much. He is really a special attacking talent, so Juventus is really going to need to keep somebody always monitoring him. But also, Dusan Tadic was just a brilliant move from them, and you know, you saw what he did against Real Madrid. He's their veteran. But David, Ajax is all about the young stars. It's all about the young stars. Frankie de Jong, people have probably heard, he is on his way to Barcelona, and he is just such a composed midfielder. He's playing really well. Matthias de Ligt, the world's worst kept secret, is just an absolute stud, and obviously Juve fans are going to be familiar with him. They just are playing really well. And now, normally I would say, well, now they're in a fight in their league. This might, you know, make them a little distracted or a little less fresh for Juve. No, not in this case. Not in this case. Yes, they really do want to win their league, but right now I know they can smell Champions League blood, so they are going to be fully ready to go on Wednesday. And really, they have been doing a great job in their league of subbing some of their players out early on, so I also don't think fitness is going to be a problem. So they got a lot of momentum heading into this tie, David, against Juve. Arsenal? Well, they absolutely laid an egg, and I can laugh because I'm a Chelsea fan, and Chelsea are fighting with Arsenal in league for a Champions League spot. Arsenal, they just had a game against Everton, and they absolutely laid an egg, lost 1-0. And really, they were playing quite well up until then. However, this is a big blow. This isn't just a loss to them, David. This is really putting them in a much more difficult situation in the Premier League for Champions League qualification. So they are going to be in that tricky spot of having to care about both. Having to care about, and I can speak on this pretty well because Chelsea are in the same spot where you have a decent shot in the Premier League of getting a Champions League spot, but you're fighting with a handful of other teams, Manchester United and Tottenham as well. And in Europa League, you're almost there. You're in the quarterfinal. So it's really tough right now for Arsenal to figure, well, what competition do we prioritize? So they can't just say, well, we lost in the Premier League. Now we'll just put all our eggs in the Europa League basket. No, they kind of have to go 50-50. So they're not heading into this game against Napoli with a lot of momentum. So Ajax are and Arsenal are not. But I'm very excited for both ties. That is for sure. So, David, now that we've had a weekend of Serie A behind us, like we do every Monday, let's do some winners and losers, shall we? So without further ado, who are winners and losers of episode 209 of the Calcio Land podcast?
Yep. So we are recording this right after Napoli's home draw against Genoa. So the weekend started with Torino traveling to Emilia Romagna to face Parma. Parma was able to get a draw without their two starting strikers, both Inglese and Gervinho. Really underrated duo. So kudos to Parma for getting 1 point. We mentioned Moise Kean. I mean, that after what happened all the week, all the controversy, he responded. I think everyone, once he come on the pitch, absolutely saw it coming that he was going to score, created perfect space on the assist and converted. We have to give another shout out to Miralem Pjanic, who is rounding into form. He also came off the bench for Juve and made a big impact. Although Milan lost, I thought this was a strong performance by Milan overall. Definitely better than what we saw in the derby and also what we saw in the home loss against Udinese. I thought Piontek, as I tweeted, he had an early miss at the beginning of the first half and then converted. We've seen enough at him that him missing two sitters in the same half just wasn't going to happen. We had Kalanoglu, I thought, had a pretty good game. He's been struggling, so Milan could really use because his ability, because he's one of the few players that can create something from nothing on the squad. And also, I think Frank Kessie had a good performance. Milan was without him for a little bit. We've seen what a difference he makes, his pace, his ability to be all over the field, underrated. And I thought, again, this was a pretty good performance for Milan despite the loss. And then we had Roma with a really big win against Sampdoria. We always say on the podcast how Sampdoria is a good home team. Roma really needed this to keep them in the race for Champions League spot. I thought Ranieri deserves credit, finally making the goalkeeper switch. Mirante at least isn't a big minus like Olsen. He had a pretty good match. Manolas, who's coming back from an injury, had a very solid performance. And on Roma, really, their leader was De Rossi, particularly moving that he had the game-winning goal. There's also this video that I retweeted on him, how hard he was working very late into the game. And he's a player that's closer to my age than yours, Alex. And that's not a positive thing for a player, but he played with a lot of heart. And you just look at De Rossi, where Roma needed him the most. Even when they were eliminated against Porto, he converted the penalty kick, and now he scored to keep them in the Champions League race. This morning, the early match, we had Frosinone with a shocking win in Tuscany against Fiorentina. It's going to be very tough for them to avoid relegation, but this win at least keeps them somewhat in the mix. And then Udinese, another huge, this match really important in the race to avoid relegation at home against Empoli. Really exciting match. We had 5 goals in the first half. We had DePaul with a brace and Mandragora, who just last weekend he had scored a volley from the outside of the box, and he had another one in this match. So, you know, slowly but surely, baby Mandragora for 20 million isn't as outrageous as it looked originally. And although Empoli lost, shout out to their striker Caputo, a beautiful set piece that has set up his 14th goal in Serie A this season. To give you a frame of reference, this is he's plays for Empoli, who are really in the race to avoid relegation. He has more goals this season than Belotti, Icardi, Mertens, and Insigne. So very strong season for him. Another excellent bomber di provincia is Pavoletti on Cagliari. He had the game winner against Spal. Spal came close to getting a point, and they really could have used it there. We had Inter-Atalanta, who didn't really live up to the hype. It was a scoreless draw. I thought Ilicic, though, once again showed all his class. Atalanta was without Zapata. I think Ilicic has played enough times brilliantly this season that we can stop having the caveat on his day. He's one of the best players in Serie A. This season, he's been just one of the best players in Serie A, period. And I've been guilty of always throwing the butt. He's inconsistent. But I think we've seen enough this season to remove that. And then on Inter, flip side, Brozovic. We always say on the podcast, as Brozovic goes, so does Inter. The minute he pulled out with the muscular injury, Inter really slowed down. Nainggolan, as usual, looks like a shell of his former self. And then we had the Napoli-Genoa match right before we're recording. We had Mertens with a goal. I'm starting to think that if it comes down to Koulibaly, Allan, and Insigne, if you have to sell one of them, to me, the easy answer is Insigne out of those, because I think the other two are just way more important for the team. And Mertens, and I know Mertens is older, but he's created a pretty nice partnership with Milik. And then we had Geno, a very important point for them with Lazovic tying the game at the end of the first half on a volley. Flip side, the losers of the weekend. We had Torino, when you look at the other results this weekend, really squandered a great opportunity to be in the race for a Champions League spot with their draw against Parma. Again, Torino's having a very solid season, but a win there would have put them right in the mix for that. And then let's talk about the controversy between Juve and Milan. Definitely very questionable call on the VAR on Alessandro. I think a lot of people expected that maybe to be overturned. It wasn't. So if you're a Milan fan into conspiracy theories, I definitely think you had a lot of ammunition after that match. I think even for Serie A, it's not a great look when Juve wins in controversial fashion like that. It sounds like the referee might be suspended after this match. Let's see what happens. I did see a journalist that I follow in Italy, Ravezzani, who made a really good point that Milan just doesn't have much clout with the referees. And, you know, they have a younger team. Their captain's Romagnoli, who's a younger player. He's received a ton of yellow cards simply for talking to the referee. Now, we don't know what he's saying, but, you know, it is pretty rare. And as Ravezzani said, Milan has a lot of foreign players, not a veteran Italian or even a real veteran of Serie A. And maybe they just don't have much clout with the referee on the pitch. Another loser was Musacchio, who really naive on the penalty. The penalty on Dybala, I think, was the least controversial call in that match. I don't think you could really dispute that because Musacchio was really naive there. Flip side for Juve, Kane, the hero after all the controversy. Bonucci once again the goat on the goal. When Chiellini is not playing, Juve's defense really, really shaky. I think Chiellini is by far the most important player on Juve, much more even than Ronaldo when you look at their options up front. And also Dybala, I think Kane's explosion, that should give him pause as well. Like, it wasn't long ago that Dybala was the crown jewel at Juve, and this has been a difficult season. And I think when you look at the way Kane is performing, becoming the new big young star on Juve, it should give him pause to reflect. And once again, after he was substituted, had a pretty public reaction showing his indignation. So I'm a big Dybala guy, but I'm starting to be a little bit concerned now. Other loser, Fiorentina, with that loss to Frosinone, the club posted something on their official site. They're going to have a meeting between ownership and the management group between the next 48 hours to evaluate what's going on with the team. I think Pioli, the manager, is going to survive because they're still in the Coppa Italia semifinal. But this is a very disappointing season for Fiorentina. When you look at the pecking order of the mid-table, upper mid-table in Serie A, it definitely feels like Fiorentina is falling behind Atalanta, Torino, even Sampdoria. Those teams, even going into next season, you know, seem to have a little bit more clout than Fiorentina. And in the race to avoid relegation, Spal, as we mentioned, lost to Cagliari, and Empoli losing to Udinese was a tough blow. Inter, the match, Icardi missed the sitter. It wasn't, you know, the best return to San Siro, missing that. He did get some help from Balotelli, who was in the stands, and at least he got a lot of insults from the fans. It wasn't just Icardi. So I think that worked to his advantage. And then we had Sturaro, who got a naive red card, pretty violent foul against Napoli. That's one time the VAR worked pretty well. And to me, the biggest loser of the weekend is Lazio, that home draw to Sassuolo. Really problematic for them because they had just lost to Spal. They really can't get out of their own way. Milan losing should have really helped them. Inter drawing. Home draw to Sassuolo is really problematic. The only silver lining for Lazio is they have one less match that they have to make up against Udinese to get themselves back in the Champions League. But this is really some points that are squandered. I know for Lazio, we always talk about them falling short in the big matches. Last year, they lost against Inter in the last match, but it was also the draw against Crotone the week before that was just as costly for the Champions League. So those are winners and losers for the weekend. Next up, we have our friend John Solano. There's so much going on with Roma off the pitch that we wanted to catch up with him on a few topics. So it wasn't even that long ago that we had our dear friend John Solano on the podcast. But with Roma, there really is always stuff to talk about. And that's a good thing for John, because he's the editor of the fantastic AS Roma Press website, and also the host of an excellent podcast featuring two other friends of the show, Nima Tavalli and Chloe Beresdorf, and that's Serie A show. So, John, listen, you know, one of the reasons I love having you on the show is you do a lot of reporting on your podcast. It's on your website on Roma. It's not just opinion, so it's great to have you on. So welcome back to Calcio Land, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be back.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. I'm going to start with the stadium situation because I think it's going to tie in a little bit with the rest. So we had you on the last two times. You were pretty optimistic about Roma getting the new stadium. And in typical Italian fashion, you got thrown a curveball. So tell me, as it stands now, when we're recording this on Friday, so things can change quickly, how do you feel about the stadium situation for Roma?
Yeah, so I think it was less than 48 hours after I said there should be no problems that there was another arrest in the government of Rome, which just shows you things truly, when it involves Italian government and politics, you never know what in the world you're in for. So I still remain optimistic. For anyone who hasn't really been following it, in the previous summer, so in the summer of 2018, there were a series of arrests. In regards to the stadium, there were several government officials who were caught being bribed by a real estate developer who was involved with the Stadio della Roma project. It turned out the club had nothing to do with those briberies. They weren't named in any sort of lawsuits. Nobody from the club was arrested. So there was some pessimism last summer. We got through that. Basically, the government had went through a series of checks to ensure that all the approvals that led to the stadium getting the green light were all kosher, so to speak, that nothing illegal or illicit was done. So after those checks were made and it appeared that nothing, there was no fraudulent activity, there was nothing, illegal that Roma had done on their part, everything was fine. You go through the typical steps as you would any other stadium, the zoning, all that good stuff. And then, as I mentioned, I think a day and a half after I was on here and I said there should be no issues, there was another arrest of a counselor in Rome. Now, this individual, his arrest really doesn't have that much of an impact because he was tied up with the real estate developer who was involved with the project, is no longer involved with the project, and the one who was arrested last summer. So it sort of just feels like things are really going against Roma at the minute and Palotta. I think we're going on year six of trying to get this thing, getting a shovel into the ground for this entire stadium. But given all of that, I still think that we are on track for a shovel being put into the ground this year. Palotta, the president of the club, has been maintaining that. He hasn't wavered. These arrests, while they do damper the situation a bit, the club has yet to be named or indicted on any single lawsuit, any single arrest. So as long as that remains the case, I still do remain hopeful that we will see the stadium starting to get built this year. So until I'm told otherwise, or until I see something otherwise, I'm going to remain on the positive track that, yes, Roma do start construction this year. Worst case scenario, the very, very early months of 2020.
I certainly hope you're right for a variety of reasons. So the reason I wanted to start with the stadium is we know that Palotta has really, put a lot of cachet into this. I'm not going to say he's kind of put his whole ownership of the club around it, but he's always said that this the stadium is what could take Roma to the next level. So we saw Pallotta, who gave full confidence to Monchi, kind of gave him the keys to the city to let him run the club, and the results are painfully obvious. And then we have this new curveball with the stadium. This isn't the first time that it seems everything's going well and there's a hiccup. And you reported, there's been some on your Twitter account, that there's interest from Qatar in acquiring Roma. So tell me first a little bit about that. And do you think Pallotta would be open to listening? And do you think recent events might push him more one way or the other?
Yeah, so I reached out to a couple of individuals at the club, and they gave me the natural politically correct response of, well, you know, Roma being a big club, we're always going to garner interest. So they didn't say yes or no one way or the other, which I expected. Nobody would. I mean, that's typically how they operate. But yeah, so I actually came into contact within about the last month or so with an individual who is very, very connected in Qatar, and Totti, members of Roma, the mayor of Rome, Raji, they were all in Qatar within the last 2 weeks. And coincidentally, they were there at the same time. And there was a series of meetings. Now, what that involved, really, a lot of people don't know what everything entailed. But an individual who the individual who I have been speaking with has been giving me pretty accurate information. So until he gives me something that's wrong, I'll continue to sort of believe the stuff he's giving me. But I was told that there is a Qatari fund and that they are interested in acquiring Roma, but they would only be interested under the guise that the stadium either will be built or the stadium is built. So really none of this is possible without the stadium being built, which I don't see how Roma are an attractive club without that stadium for anybody. So whether it's foreign investment from outside of Italy or someone within Italy, we always see the name of Sampdoria's Ferrero, who's linked to potentially acquiring the club. I don't think anybody would acquire Roma without knowing what the situation with the stadium is. So given that, let's operate under the assumption that the stadium is built. I actually do think, believe it or not, that Pallotta would listen to offers. He understands a lot of criticism. If you don't follow Roma very closely, even if you do follow Roma closely and you don't speak Italian that well, you would be amazed at the level of criticism that he receives. So I think you mix that in with he doesn't travel to Rome a lot. I think he's there maybe once or twice a year. I think in 2018 he was there twice. He has not gone back to Rome since last summer. So I get the impression that while he does love the club, he does, he is enthusiastic about it. He loves watching the sport. I think he admitted in a recent interview, it's his favorite sport now in front of NBA basketball, which is amazing, considering the world where he came from. I do think he would entertain offers only because he has poured so much money into this. And I think, especially if the stadium drags on, I think we're going to get to a point where he just feels like there's no more gas left in the tank and there's really not much more he can do. Now, if the stadium gets approved, there's light at the end of the tunnel, I think we might see a more re-energized Pallotta. But maybe it's just because this season has been extremely hard on him. Just the mood I get from him, the tone I get from him, I just in my interactions with him, I do think he would be open to selling. And whether or not that would ultimately be from Qatar remains to be seen. But there is interest from Qatar, and rightfully so. I mean, we've seen what they've done with clubs such as PSG. I think just in terms of branding, you have Rome, you have the Colosseum, you have people like Totti at the club. I think there's a lot of branding potential that would make Roma fascinating. But I think that's an area where Pallotta has really, really not lived up to where I think Roma could be. Commercially, they're just not where they need to be at all. And I think if they did get foreign investment, and that means Peralta giving up his major stake. I think that could be a very positive thing for the club.
Interesting. So let's talk. So I think, you know, Peralta put a lot of faith into Monchi. We know that didn't really work out. That position is now vacant. So there's a lot of potential routes for Roma. You've covered a lot of the potential solutions for the next sporting director. What do you think is going to happen next in that regard?
Well, what I want is for them to confirm the current sporting director, Ricky Masada, who is, a lot of people don't know this about him, but he has been at the side of the ex-Roma sporting director, Sabatini, for a decade now. He sort of works in the shadows. He doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't give many interviews. He's a bit mysterious. So I see the enthusiasm around him being not so high as opposed to other names like Lille's Luis Campos or even Torino's Pichacchi. But I want them to confirm Masada because, as we saw with Monchi, there is a period of adaptation at Roma. And even with someone like Pichacchi coming from Torino, I think it's such a different place and such a unique place that I truly do think that there is almost this period where your margin for error is so big because this is such a different city to operate in. It's such a different club to operate in. I know you mentioned it a million times, but truly the pressure at Roma is just so unprecedented for a club, especially that hasn't won a lot, that I think you truly need somebody who understands the environment, understands the club, understands the fans. And Masada has been there. He arrived when Sabatini arrived. He left when Sabatini left for Inter. And then he came back when Sabatini left Inter and went to Sampdoria. So I do think he is the right man for the job. But in my interactions with Peralta and some of the people at the club, I get the sense that he is not the quote-unquote sexy name. He's not flashy. He doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't have the personality as a Sabatini. He doesn't have the reputation before arriving at Roma of a Monchi. So I can understand from Peralta's point of view why appointing him might not garner positive reviews from both inside and outside the club. But I do think the right move would be hiring him because, again, he's so familiar with the club. He understands the environment. And this is a guy, people truly don't know this, but Sabatini is known for finding those gems, especially in South America. Masada has those exact same connections, and he has them especially strong in France. He is so well connected in France. And I think that Sabatini's eye for finding those young players, given Roma's situation where they might not even be in the Champions League next year, I think Masada is the right man for the job. But unfortunately, I don't think they're going to give it to him. I think they will find another name. They have held talks with Leo's Luis Campos, and I wouldn't be shocked if he's the one who is ultimately named the new sporting director, which for me is the wrong choice because I think if there was ever a time where Roma needed the sure thing, so to speak, it would be now. And for me, Masada represents the sure thing. I don't think they can afford to take any more risks, especially because of how badly they were burned by Monchi. I mean, they were absolutely duped by him. I don't think they can afford to make another big risk. And in my opinion, that's what Luis Campos represents. I would prefer, as I said, to see Masada, but I really, really do have a strong inkling that that won't be the case.
Yeah, people say that I agree too often with our guests, but this makes perfect sense to me. I can't believe they're seriously considering someone from the outside of not just Roma, but Italy altogether for this. Yeah, so I'm not sure if the sporting director, whoever comes in, is going to pick the new coach or if they'll do it for him before. So Ranieri came in as a caretaker to try to bring him to the Champions League. You know, regardless of what happens on the pitch, it doesn't really seem like he'll be the guy next season. So there's been a lot of names linked to Roma. We've heard of Sarri. We've heard of Giampaolo. We've heard of even Gattuso recently. So tell me a little bit, what do you see the landscape out there for Roma's potential next coach?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. The next coach, a lot of people don't know this about Roma either, but former sporting director at Roma, well, not sporting director, technical director at Roma, the former sporting director at Spurs, Franco Baldini, he is a man who has so much influence at Roma, and he's not even technically a club employee. He's an advisor to President Palotta, and he has so much influence at the club. It's pretty eye-opening. He's a guy Palotta trusts. Palotta came from outside of the footballing world. Baldini is the one who held his hand, introduced him to all these big names. Now Palotta's friends with guys like Sir Alex Ferguson. Because of Baldini, he introduced him to him. So Baldini is a guy who advises him on a lot of things, particularly managerial choices. And Baldini has met with Sarri. He likes Sarri. So I think that is the direction that Roma will ultimately go. Palotta does like Antonio Conte as well, but I think that's going to be a difficult one given his wages. And also given there might be an opening at Milan and Inter. They're probably going to be in the Champions League. As far as money goes, they're going to have more available to them. So I would assume those two clubs are a much more interesting proposal for Conte than Roma would be. But I do think Sarri would be a good choice. He understands the environment. He's coming from Napoli, which is another place where very, very high pressure. And at Roma, sometimes you can get away with not getting the results, but playing good football. I mean, somehow, some way, Zeman is still held in incredibly high regard in the city, and he's never won anything. And as long as you play the nice football, sometimes you can get away with the lack of results at Roma. So I do think that's the way it's going to go. I don't see Gianpaolo being a name that Palotta would appoint. I don't think Gasperini would be the one that they appoint either. To me, both of those two guys carry risks, especially Gianpaolo. I mean, this is a guy who, when he was at Brescia, he disappeared for 3 days because there was too much pressure. So, yeah, you bring him to Roma, I don't think that would be a good fit at all. So, I do think it'll be Saturday, but who knows what Chelsea is going to do given their transfer ban. Part of me doesn't like having to wait on another club to sack their manager so you could appoint him. Something doesn't feel right about that, but that does feel the way it's trending.
Well, I want Sarri back in Serie A, so that sounds really good to me. So let's close on Zaniolo. So we're recording this on Friday, and they're after the midweek match. He was asked about his contract situation at Roma, and he said, you know, I need to meet with ownership. We'll see what happens, which to me, you know, was typical transfer talk. I never put really any stock into that stuff, especially, you know, a 19-year-old talking like that. He backtracked the comments a little bit, but, you know, he definitely needs to get a raise. It's an interesting situation with his agent, Vigorelli. So tell me a little bit how you see the situation with Zaniolo in general.
Yeah, I think he's 99.9% going to sign a new contract at Roma. Him leaving, I don't think makes sense for anybody. It doesn't make sense for Roma. Would it make sense for him? He's really only played half of a season, if you think about it. I mean, the first 3 or 4 months, he played a very bit part role. And then obviously, it's history from what he's done from December on. But, I mean, it's not like his value is selling him now for Roma would make so little sense. So I don't see how anybody would benefit from him leaving club. He's going to get a huge raise in wages. He's going to sign a new contract. The sporting director Massara met with Vigorelli yesterday, actually, at Trigoria. Now, they didn't talk actual hard numbers, but I do think he'll sign his contract within the next month, and I don't see it as a big issue. Roma are going to go a massive wage restructuring this summer, I think. We're going to see names like Dzeko, Pastore, Nzonzi, maybe even Parotti, all leave the club, and those guys are the highest earners. So to me, it makes total sense to see those guys leave the club, build around Zaniolo, make him your biggest earner at the club, give him the big wages, make him happy, because he's very deserving of it. And we have to be frank here. Roma don't have many building blocks right now to build around, because I do think they need a major, major reconfiguration of the roster. And if you look at the majority of the big names that they have, I mean, they're all older. So to me, it doesn't make sense for anybody, for the player, for Roma. It doesn't make sense for Zaniolo to leave. So it makes total sense. They'll get a new contract done. I'm very, very positive that that will happen. And I'm very positive that it'll happen within the next month or so. So I'm not worried at all. I think the only way that would change is if some club came in with an obscene offer, 60, 70, 80 million euros, which I can't see happening at this point.
Yeah, so I'm going to agree with you completely on the Zaniolo one. The stadium, I appreciate your optimism, but on Zaniolo, I'm with you. It makes no sense for anyone involved. So, guys, there's always so much to talk about at Roma. We literally could have John on every week, but he covers all this stuff brilliantly on Ask Roma Press, the website, also the podcast, which is terrific, and then the other show, Serie A Show, with our friends Nima and Chloe. So, John, thanks so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me again, David.
All right. Always great to hear from John Solano. Not a stranger to the show, and he's welcome every single time. So, David, this is a segment that's also always welcome. It's Twitter questions. We love our Twitter questions from our listeners. We get such great questions, and that remains the same for this episode. So let's start with them. All right, David, first Twitter question. Is there a functional benefit to having a strong Milan and Inter for Serie A beyond nostalgia?
Yeah, long and short of it, yes. And I think it goes back to the fact we were talking about Atalanta last week, that it really comes down to revenues. And although in Milan and Inter have struggled the past, 6, 7 years, Napoli and Roma have been better because of their history, their imprint worldwide. Like, Milan and Inter just have higher revenues. It's no surprise that although they haven't had squads good enough to go to the Champions League, especially Milan in recent years, their payrolls are always in the top 3 or 4 in the league. So, yeah, I know you could say, well, Napoli, Roma, Lazio have been playing better. Why can't they just go to the Champions League? I think in the long term, it's still better for Serie A to have Milan and Inter be strong. Inter getting out of their financial fair play restrictions soon should be a big move forward for Serie A as a whole, because I think it'd be great if we can start seeing them competing with Juve a little bit more. I think Milan getting back to the Champions League would be really good for the league, for the attention that it brings, and it also would help Milan financially. So again, because they have just much higher revenues than any other team in Italy beyond Juve, I still think it's not just nostalgia, it's not just jerseys, it's not the big fan bases, although that's part of it. It's the revenues and the attention that they generate.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think you can even stretch it to good for football for many reasons besides nostalgia. All right, David, next Twitter question. When can we expect Serie A's production quality to match the Premier League's?
So if we're talking about TV and branding of the league, I think it's going to take a while. And look, you know, here in the U.S., I definitely think having ESPN as a partner has been a massive step forward. ESPN Plus is a fantastic app. It's much easier to watch the games in the U.S. compared to what it was before. The quality of the image is better. I think it's great that they have a game of the week on TV with our friend Matteo Bonetti on ESPN that, you know, is always going to be on. I've seen even the quality of the recap shows is much better. I mean, I remember a few years ago, Gab Marcotti was on our podcast saying that, you know, Serie A, when they used to produce their own weekly recaps of the matches and they would pitch it to the partners in the UK that had the rights to Serie A, those videos were so bad that they just wouldn't play them. If you watch Rai International and you know the videos that I'm talking about, the production value of what ESPN does now is on a whole other level, but there's definitely a lot of work to be done. I think, you know, you can be the biggest Premier League hater, but if you live in the United States, and I'm sure the coverage in a lot of other countries is really similar, It's just really brilliant, and it's a product that's very friendly for television. It's easier, you know, the stadiums look great. I mean, today, this Napoli-Genoa match, when you watch the San Paolo on television, like Napoli might be the most fun team to watch in Serie A, but their stadium, what goes on around it, it's really poor to watch. So it's not just about the TVs, it's the stadiums, and it's going to take time. So I think Serie A has had a great product on the pitch for a few seasons in a row, for sure. There are some steps in the positive direction with ESPN, but it's going to take for the Premier League, it's going to take a long time to catch up to that.
Really good point there on the stadiums. I haven't thought about that too much, but that really does add to the TV experience in the Premier League. There's a lot of intimate, close to the pitch atmospheres and television views. And yeah, everything counts when you're viewing it, especially from a TV. All right, David, next Twitter question. It is coming from someone who's saying, I'm torn between supporting Inter, Roma, or Napoli. Who do I choose?
I like how you had to specify with someone else. I mean, Alex, everyone knows you're a Milanista by now, but good. I like you specified. I should have put the name of the account, so my apologies. So it's a good question. So here's the case for all of them. So Roma, they are kind of the Serie A hipster club, fantastic social media team, but not making the Champions League. And now, when you, as you heard in the interview with Pallotta, there's a lot of uncertainty. But if Roma would ever win the Scudetto, any Roma fan who's been around for when Totti won it, there's really nothing quite like it. But I think Roma might have some lean years coming up. Napoli, you know, very financially stable. I think, you know, they're going to finish second this season. On paper right now, they potentially could be the second best team next season. Let's see how they do in the Europa League. Just very hard for them to win a trophy, but at least you are going to have, you know, a team. As long as De Laurentiis is there, you know, they're going to do well on the transfer market. They're always going to have exciting young players. But I'm not sure how much they can win. I think Inter, if you're more into winning and the history, and sometimes fans like to gloat about victories that happened well before, not that they were supporting the team, or before they were born, Inter, you have the history, the players that they've had in the past. And I think their Inter, in a lot of ways, is on the rise. Let's see if they bring Conte in, but they could be an exciting team. So I think of the two, of the three, I would say Inter has the most advantages, Roma the most risk, but the upside maybe the highest, and Napoli kind of in the middle. But there's a lot of reasons why being a Napoli fan is pretty cool. It's kind of like being a Borussia Dortmund fan, I would say.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Will Douglas Costa stay at Juve in 2019?
It's interesting how he's almost an afterthought right now. You know, at the start of the season, I mean, Douglas Costa was one of the most exciting players in Serie A, and we've said it a lot at the beginning of the season. We had him in winners and losers frequently. We used to say he was fuori categoria in Serie A, so someone outside the categories because his speed and dribbling were so superior to pretty much everyone else in the league. This has been a very difficult season for him. Look, at Bayern Munich, he didn't have a great reputation as a teammate, so they were pretty happy to let him go to Juve. They sold him for a lot of money to Juve. Like, they got him on loan. They paid the option to buy $45 million, which for Juve, you know, for any club, that's a lot of money. I think he's 27 now. He's had a difficult season. We remember the spitting incident, which feels like a lifetime ago. And then he had the car accident. And then he went to Neymar's birthday party right after the car accident, which Juve didn't appreciate. If you know anything of Juve's history, and we talked about the Soldatini syndrome, that we've had players in the past like that were blackballed at Juve. So I got to say, I'd be pretty surprised if he's back on Juve next season. The thing that's interesting, though, is I know Juve fans, even if he were to be sold, because they spent so much on him last season, he wouldn't be a huge profit. I doubt they could get more or even close to, or about what they paid Bayern Munich for the option to buy. They've amortized just 1 year. So a difficult situation. To give you a comparison, Pjanic, on the other hand, his amortization's almost done. They paid him less to begin with than Douglas Costa. So there's a big difference between selling, say, Pjanic or Douglas Costa. But my guess is, no, Douglas Costa isn't going to be on Juve. You know, Kane doesn't play the same position by any means, but I think even Bernardeschi's rise, you look how, you know, Dybala and Douglas Costa, you know, used to see them as the guys that would be around Ronaldo. That's kind of really changed now. So Juve is loaded up front, but I have a feeling mainly because of character issues, Douglas Costa won't be on the team next season. But this is just my opinion, not information or anything I've heard.
You know what? I totally forgot he existed. Totally forgot he existed. Wow. All right. Yeah, the spitting incident. That really does seem like it was seasons ago, but haven't heard a peep from him since. All right, David, next question. We know the story of Fiorentina paying Astori's salary for life is not true. So why would it resurface again?
Yeah, I mean, this is really in poor taste. And you thought this was more of an international break type story. It happened afterwards. You know, I think it's because we have so many news aggregators out there, so many people tweeting things and people, you know, sites reporting what a news aggregator said as opposed to the original source. So, you know, it really becomes the telephone game. And look, you know, people are addicted to retweets. People will post stuff to get retweets. Sites are addicted to clicks and getting people to click on a link. So it's really sad that it resurfaces, you know, maybe for retweets or clicks. And, you know, when you think of a story, it's really a shame that it comes down to that. But yeah, to clarify, it's definitely not a true story. Fiorentina has done a lot to support the Astori family, but it's just not, doesn't even really make sense that it would be the way it's described. So always beware, as I like to say, you know, always try to find the original source. If someone's tweeting something and they put via whatever, be sure to go look at the site, because sometimes that site is quoting another site. And before you know it, you don't even know where the information came from or if it's even remotely true.
Becomes a bad game of telephone, that is for sure. All right. Who would you rather see avoid relegation between Empoli and Udinese?
So Udinese's win today was really huge. I was thinking of this question before the match and someone asked. So for Udinese, you know, they have the new stadium and the team-owned stadium, which I like to mention that so many people think that a new stadium is a silver bullet that's going to solve everything for a lot of Italian clubs. And the Udinese one's really a clear example that it's not quite that simple. So because at least it is a beautiful stadium and Udinese does have more resources than Empoli, you can make the case for that. But this is definitely not the Udinese from the Guidolin days, the Alexi Sanchez, the Isla, the good Udinese teams. This is very different. Empoli do have a lot of exciting prospects. And look, they do play exciting football. Andrea Zoli, who just came back, you know, is kind of a little bit in the Sarri mold. I think Empoli is really an exciting club. They do a very good job of going up and down between Serie A. It's too bad they can't stay in Serie A longer. So when it comes to quality of play and what they bring on the pitch, I'd rather have Empoli, stadium, financial, and maybe for Serie A as a whole, better for Udinese, but for viewing product, definitely Empoli.
All right, David, let's move away from football now. How did Kurt Cobain influence you and others that you know or knew?
So this, I can't believe it. It was the 25th anniversary of Kurt Cobain passing away this week. Man, I remember exactly where I was when I found out. 25 years. Wow, that makes me feel really old. I was in high school. So I think, you know, what's really interesting at that time, and we've talked about it on the pod, before music was very fake, and these crazy videos and the Motley Crue and the Poison and the, you know, chasing girls and that part of lifestyle. And then we had Guns N' Roses, who kind of changed that style. They kind of came from that element a little bit, but made it a little bit more serious. But they were really over the top, like this huge rock band, like kind of in a parallel universe. I think Kurt Cobain made it seem like really anyone could be a musician or a rock star. And, I think that was really influential in that sense. They weren't great musicians in Nirvana, except for Dave Grohl. Kurt Cobain, you know, went out of his way to not really be a celebrity. Didn't really care if he was a good guitar player or not. So I don't know. He made it believe that anyone could do what he was doing. And to me, what's interesting is I'll tell you, you know, I saw all these theories of people out there saying that he didn't kill himself and he was murdered. I mean, anyone who's kind of my age and really followed those years, I mean, you can just trust your ears and your eyes and see what it was. And it also, you know, was a reminder that, you know, you always felt like celebrity and fame and making money would be the ultimate and bring you happiness. And I think he was really one of the first to show that wasn't necessarily the case.
All right, David, next question comes from Art Morelli, and he asks, trailer for the Joker, you in or you out?
So I'm so old that I was trying to tweet this trailer and I tweeted the wrong one, a fake one. But I'm going to justify my age for that happening. But I actually watched the real trailer for the Joker, and I saw the response on Twitter overall was really terrible for the trailer. I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, it wasn't the greatest trailer I've seen, but I'm in because of the main character, which we'll get in the next question. I think this could be a very interesting movie. I think this is going to be very different than definitely the Joker we saw with Jack Nicholson and the one with Heath Ledger. So I'm in. I'm actually pretty intrigued by what this movie is going to be about.
Yeah, I got to say, after seeing the trailer myself, I just feel like the trailer was purposefully holding back in terms of the Joker is obviously a very profound character. And I just feel like the trailer didn't want to give too much away to the Joker once he really becomes the Joker. So I feel like it was purposefully kind of holding back and not that entertaining to some. All right, David, next Twitter question. Where do you rate Joaquin Phoenix amongst current actors?
So Joaquin Phoenix is the reason why, even if the trailer was much worse than how I perceived it, I would still want to go see this movie. So, you know, let's look at the best actors right now. I feel like there's some who have amazing charisma, like Denzel, Leo DiCaprio. I mean, they're both wonderful actors, but they are so much bigger than life. Like, it's kind of hard to distinguish themselves from the characters that they play. We have De Niro and Pacino. If you went historically, sure, they're up there amongst the greatest, but they haven't, you know, right now they haven't particularly aged well. They've done a lot of bad movies. Daniel Day-Lewis says he's retired, so let's go on the assumption that he is retired. So for me, it really comes down to Christian Bale and Joaquin Phoenix for the crown for the best performance actor, not the biggest movie stars, because that's Denzel and Leo, and we can add Brad Pitt to that. But just for me, the best pure actors, it's these two. I just feel like, you know, if you go by the criteria, who else could play some of the parts that they do? And I'm just not sure if there is someone that could pull it off, especially with Joaquin Phoenix. You know, I rewatched The Master a few times recently. That's really an unbelievable performance. I'm not sure really if anyone else could do that. He's done a lot of other great movies. I really like the movie Her. He's really, really good in that. I thought he was good as Johnny Cash and Walk the Line. I'm not a big fan of Inherent Vice. That's my least favorite P.T. Anderson movie, but he's good in that. And of course, everyone remembers him from Gladiator. In almost all those movies, with Gladiator, you could find someone being like an asshole like that. But those other movies, I have a hard time seeing someone that could pull it off quite that well. I think Christian Bale, fantastic at the biopics. I thought what he did with Dick Cheney, I think the guy from Queen winning the Oscar over him is just absolute robbery. But I'm just not sure if he can do as weird stuff as Joaquin Phoenix. I think he can get pretty close. I'm not sure Joaquin Phoenix could do Dick Cheney as well as Christian Bale. So for me, it's those two, but for different reasons. Okay. And the streak of excellent guests continues on Calcio Land. A lot of our Twitter followers asked us to bring back Matt Santangelo, who we had on for the first time a few months ago. For those of you not familiar with his work, he's a contributor on Football Italia, Gentleman Ultra, These Footy Times, and is also the co-host of an excellent podcast called State of Play Pod. So, Matt, thanks for coming on to chat about Milan. We are literally recording this right after the Juve match, so I appreciate your time. So give me your hot take on the match. What were the things that stood out to you the most out of what we just saw?
Well, one of the things I thought stood out to me most was how Milan looked a little bit more assured, a little more confident, a little bit more quicker building out the back with Pepe Reina. Of course, as he being the goalkeeper under Maurizio Sarri at Napoli all those years, he was kind of at the heart of that in certain points. And I feel that, you know, that was one of the things that came under question with Donnarumma over the past couple of weeks with that error he made against Samp. I just feel that, you know, when you're building out the back, having that keeper that you can kind of play to and you can confidently spray the ball, distribute the ball well. And I think Pepe Reina did a really good job today. There was points and times where you could see he was a little bit, not flustered, but a little bit angry with his defense and how they were kind of conceding too much space. And you know, obviously, individual errors in this one cost him, of course, Musacchio, which gets me to my next takeaway is, it is not he can't be a starting central defender for Milan if they were to make a top four finish and obviously get to the Champions League. He's not bad, but I think there's certain times where he kind of looks like a bull in a china shop. He kind of just goes into challenges a little bit too aggressively instead of staying on his feet and just playing the guy. Of course, he hacks down Dybala. And and then, of course, you know, individual errors, that's probably my third takeaway, seem to be costing Milan points and really games time and time again. Calabria, and as I just mentioned with Musacchio, that's the frustrating thing too, because I think that Milan did some good things in this. They played a little bit quicker, they were countering a little bit quicker, and you saw some signs of what they're able to do. I thought Barini was all things considered pretty effective down the left side as well. So it's just one of those things where even when Juve maybe aren't their best, they always find a way to win. They just have that much talent. And from a Milan's perspective, those are my takeaways. But my biggest takeaway for probably Juve is the fact that Moise Kean, I think he's a kid that's quickly showing that he can start games consistently for Juve, in my opinion. I think that's a lot to put on a kid, but you know, you see what he's done with the national team. You're seeing what he's doing off the bench. You see what he's doing for the Italy in a wide role. He gives Juve a ton of different looks up front, and I think he's a really, really special talent that Juve should be happy about.
Yeah, to me, this was Milan's best match since the international break against Inter. They got outclassed, except for a small part in the second half against Udinese that was poor, and they definitely deserve points today. And I think with Keane, you know, what's interesting is you look how his star is rising and how Dybala, on the other hand, has really struggled this season. It's amazing how quickly things change. So the next question I have is Milan on the Champions League. And this might not be totally fair since this we're recording this before Inter, Atalanta, and Lazio. But give me just your feeling in general, because before the international break, it looked pretty good for Milan with this. So do you think, if you had to put a percentage, what do you think Milan's chances are to get back to the Champions League?
Oh, I think they're slightly over 50%. I would probably put it at 55-60% right now. And the reason why I say that is because they have a pretty favorable schedule on the way out of the season once it gets into May. They played, you know, Frosinone, Bologna, and those are the games you really just have to take care of. Obviously, they dropped points at Udinese, and even early on in the season, Empoli, and some of these matches, that's where you really lose, right? That's where you really lose sight of your objectives. It's not so much you dropping points to a team like Juve, but tying Udinese early on in the week was crucial to me. If Milan managed to beat Udinese and then they came to Turin and they lost to Juve like they did, I think Milan fans would have been, you know what, that's kind of more or less expected. A team like Juve is so good at home, they're the team that's going to win the league again. But I do think they have like a 60% chance, and the reason why I put it a little bit higher than 50-50 is because we've seen how, you know, turbulent this season has been for Roma. And even with Lazio, where you think they're turning the corner and then all of a sudden they start losing games to like Spal. So I think it's really up for grabs at this point. I think Inter are a team that, if you're asking me about them, I feel they're going to start to come into their rhythm. They're getting a huge boost with Mauro Riccardi back, having Lautaro Martinez on the bench, who's been good, and he was good in his absence. I think Inter are going to kind of hit their stride. They're going to finish the season strong. They're going to finish third. And it's really going to come down to three teams and possibly a fourth, of course, of Atalanta. So I think, you know, Roma, Lazio, Milan, and Atalanta all for one spot. It's going to be really exciting finish to the season.
Yeah, totally agree. So let's talk about the attack. So Piontek, your boy, he wasn't going to miss two sitters in the same half. You knew the second time he'd convert. But let me ask you, briefly, Gattuso played him with Cutrone, and I thought that was the only positive note in the match against Udinese, and today he went back to the usual 4-3-3. Would you like to see Piontek and Cutrone play together more often?
I would. I think in certain matches, in certain cases, yes, I would like to see them to play, see if they can coexist. There has been a lot of questions around, not so much recently, but I think once Piontek came to Milan and started scoring goals, Cutrone's kind of that all effect wore off on him. And then there were some quotes with his agent saying, well, we'll see what happens with his future in the summer. For me, I would like to give Cutrone that nod. You want to keep those young players hungry, motivated, and I think Allegri's done a good job of doing that with his team. And with Moise Kean, a guy who is a teenager, is looking to get more minutes. But when he is getting his fair share of minutes to show what he's worth, and that keeps a player hungry, that keeps a player motivated, keeps a player in form. And, you know, that's what I would like to see. However, Milan are in a little bit of a difficult spot because who are you going to play in that? You know, assuming they go 4-3-1-2, who are you going to play in the hole behind the two strikers as that missing link to connect the two? So with Paqueta out, is it Calhanoglu? Is it Suso? They really don't have the guy right there that you could probably plug in there. If they go 4-4-2, maybe that's another conversation. But in certain matches, again, it really depends on who they're playing. But I would definitely like to see Cutrone and Piontek see if they could coexist together. I know many people are saying they're very similar in terms of profile and what they do. They obviously do need that service. But I do think there are some matches where you can call on them two to start and see if that's something they can build and see if there's some chemistry there between the two.
So we're now in the last third of the season. So I'm going to ask, starting with you, all of our guests through the end of the season, which of the current players on the team now do you want to see back on Milan as starters next season?
Ooh, that's a tough one. It's one I get quite a bit because everyone's, you know, thinking ahead, right? If we get to Champions League, how many of these guys are actually starting material? I think there's maybe three. I would say 3-4 max. I mean, that's just being maybe a little bit harsh, but that's just the harsh reality of the situation, right? There's a lot of players on this team that are Europa League quality. They're good players. You know, they can start games occasionally, but when it comes to the Champions League, if you want to have any hopes of getting out of the group and making some sort of good run, you really need quality in multiple areas and pretty much all areas on the pitch. So I would say Romagnoli. I think Bakayoko brings a ton to the midfield. It's one of those cases where I don't think he and Kessié can be two starting players for you. I think you can have both on the team, but I don't think both can be starters, in my opinion, if Milan were again to qualify for a top four. Piontek, and I would probably say Suso, but Suso is one of those players I'm kind of like on the fence with because I think he is a good player, don't get me wrong, and you can see what type of effect he can have on a game. Of course, with that ball he played into a Piontek that he missed wide, but I think it's somewhere around 3-4 players. I really do think they have to spend, oh, of course, Paqueta, he did not play today. So I'll probably say around 4 or 5 players, which again makes it the job a little bit more difficult for Leonardo in the summer to spend and plug in some of those holes and bolster in certain areas.
So the last two questions come from one of our patrons, Evan Morris, who's very excited you're on the show. So Gattuso, the last time you were on, you weren't so convinced you wanted him back next season. Obviously, the past stretch hasn't been positive for him. So if you were to replace Gattuso, I'm going to ask you in two ways. Tell me who your ideal, maybe not completely unrealistic, but ideal pick is. And what do you think would be a fallback realistic option to replace Gattuso next season?
So two of my options, obviously, Conte is definitely one of them. He's more or less very similar in terms of his demeanor, his tenacity, his overall approach to coaching. Like Gattuso, they're very similar in that regard. But for me, looking at this is something that has come up in the past couple of days. Leonardo seems to be interested in, or rather Milan as a whole seems to be interested in possibly, you know, Mauricio Pochettino from Spurs. To me, that seems something just to sell papers. It doesn't seem too realistic at this point in time, because obviously you're going to have to give a manager like him guarantees. And with him being such a hot commodity and getting interest abroad, you're really going to have to convince him on your project. And I'm not saying that Milan can't, but it's one of those things where Conte is a free agent. You don't have to take him from anyone. You don't have to pay any sort of, clause or anything like that, like Chelsea had to do with Sarri. So Conte seems like the most logical option. He obviously wants to come back to Italy, in my opinion. He wants to coach again at the club level. And I would be totally fine with that. A guy who has won trophies with Juve. He knows how to coach at a big club. He has won the Premier League with Chelsea. He did a great job with that Azzurri team in the 2016 Euro. So Conte would be my preferred option. But if they can get a guy like Mauricio Pochettino, who again has that interest abroad and elsewhere, that would just go to show you how much outsiders view and how much they really believe in what Milan's new regime is doing.
So last question, you are expert on the Polish market. You were on the Piontek train well before he exploded. So there's also Milik. There's really been a strong Zieliński. You have a lot of good Polish players in Serie A. Tell me if there's some more coming or players we should be keeping our eye on from Poland.
Well, look, there's been a Polish wave the past 5-6 years, I would say. It seems like the number's multiplying, and it just goes to show you that Serie A has built a great league in recent memory from, you know, kind of a little bit of a difficult spell. So there is a ton of value, and there's a lot of Polish internationals that do see value. And making that next move to Italy is, obviously, we saw it with Zieliński, we saw it with Milik, as you just mentioned, Piontek, another one as well. But there's two coming up in the summer that definitely people should keep an eye on. Two confirmed moves. They're still on their club, respective clubs in Poland. The first one is Filip Jagiello. He's a midfielder, 21 years old. Definitely has a bright future. He's confirmed to go to Genoa. He's just finishing the season out with his team in Poland. And then there's Szymon Zurkowski. He's another midfielder who are both these guys are actually big key pieces for the Polish national team's U21 side. He's a good midfielder. He's on his way to Fiorentina. Good box-to-box player. Has a cannon for a left foot. He's a guy that I feel that can really make a somewhat comparable waves to what Zieliński did a couple seasons ago in his very first season at Napoli, and of course at the tail end of his career at Udinese. So those are two guys to keep in mind and to keep an eye on really if you're thinking more towards next season. But there's definitely going to be more that kind of come in, and who knows, maybe we see another Piontek come over from Poland and have a similar impact. But definitely keep an eye on more Polish players coming in the summer.
Awesome, Matt. So just tell our listeners what they can expect if they tune in to your podcast, State of Play, or any articles that you're working on right now.
Yes, with the State of Play, we cover Europe's top five leagues plus Major League Soccer. That's something we definitely want to have an emphasis on. Obviously, my partner is in London. He's an Arsenal fan. So I obviously have a huge following of Serie A followers and European followers as well. But we are getting our footprint in Major League Soccer, which is exciting. We're having more guests coming on. So we're not so much focusing on transfer news that seems to be developing, which seems like every day. We're focused on more of the big headlines, you know, Moise Kean's wave, his impact on the national team, just to be one of them. You know, racism in football, racism in Serie A. So just look at, when you look for the State of Play, just look at diversity, us covering all our bases and giving you, the listener, a little bit of variety. And with my articles, yeah, I think there's been more exciting things coming. I'm going to be contributing more for these Football Times and Gentleman Ultra. I have a couple pieces in the pipeline. So make sure you guys check that out. And thank you for the support.
Awesome, Matt. Always a pleasure to have you on. And I look forward to chatting with you about Milan, Serie A in general, in the future on the podcast. Thanks so much for hopping on today.
David, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the CalcioLand podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.